back to the Commercial Property Investor Podcast. If you've been investing in residential property but now want to diversify into commercial property investing, then you've come to the right place. We started our property investing journey by investing in residential property, and then after searching for what seemed like forever, we found a commercial deal which changed everything. We have a number of commercial lettings, including single lets, but my favourite niche is commercial multiple occupancy projects, or CMO for short. These properties can often end up as multi-use too. One of the components that is at a few of these locations is actually storage. And storage in itself is actually quite diverse. And I'm going to share some of our experiences with container storage business. First off, it's a great business to be in. Personally, I really like it. Buy a metal box, put it on some unused ground, and rent it out. The rules are much more balanced than a tenancy agreement for, say, a two-bedroom house, that's for sure. However, before you go out and order a load of containers from the first container ship you see coming into your local port, there's a little bit more to it than you might think. That is what I'm going to cover today. Container storage, or alternative storage types, are a great addition to a CMO site, as I say. But let me say to you up front, I don't have any sites that are exclusively storage containers only. I'll go into that a little bit more later on. In fact, I'm actually going to do a mini series about this subject, and today is more of an introduction to see if this is something you really want to add to your offering. But first of all, let's give this some of my favourite word, context. Even the storage business comes in lots of guises. I'm going to be talking almost exclusively about self-storage rather than things like larger distribution or storage businesses. They tend to be companies who actually offer a storage management service where they effectively store and manage your stock on your behalf. It's almost like drop shipping they do from there. But in terms of both internally accessed and externally accessed self-storage, there are broadly four different types. The first one really is provided by removal companies, and I've used in the past for moving house. And they have a warehouse to provide storage crates, but their main business is really based around high density storage in warehousing, where you have a limited access, so it's not really self-storage, and they need to be warned that you're actually going to visit so they can pull out your crate. Some of them will offer crates that you can access yourself within a certain time frame as well, but it's not really a full self-storage offering. And the market's been really developed by self-storage companies, and this is the second one, who model their business around you renting a lockable space that is actually exclusively for you. And there are lots of internal walk-in units fitted out for self-storage customers. In fact, the US market is really well developed. And, you know, as an investment sector, it's become mainstream, really, and it's quite competitive. There are institutional investors in this market, and I've even seen expected yield rates of around 5% for investment value. Consolidation's been going on there and is much further ahead than in the UK. But there are some really big brands in the UK now, but these are usually of the same model or type. They're purpose-built or retrofitted industrial units with sort of a multi-story layout with individual units accessed from either lifts up to long corridors, or sometimes you'll have the ability to drive into a communal space at the rear for ground floor units. The third one is garage units. Maybe that's not the technical term for them, I don't know, but this is basically, they look like garage units. They've got an up and over door. They're usually externally accessed, sometimes internally though. And these units are usually built in a terraced format. It's very popular in the US, particularly in Florida, where I've seen loads of locations. People can pull up, store their boat for the winter, or use it to clear out space in a spare room for an office or perhaps a new family member at home. And people use these for a long time. And then the fourth one is outside containers, usually in a compound. And this is the one I'm going to concentrate on, as it's the one I know best. We have some warehousing for storage customers and internal storage units, including crates. We also have some archive storage, but metal shipping containers are hard to beat. So in this episode, I'm really going to go into what are shipping containers, How do they, how much do they cost? Where do you source them from? Who are the customers for them? Why would you even do it? And what kind of site do you need? Lots of the other stuff like funding and finance and stuff I will go into in some of these future mini episodes. But just back to the start there, what are they? Well, I mean, most of you have seen them. They're usually on the back of a lorry or a train or a container ship. They're used to transport goods all over the world, and about 90% of metal storage containers are actually manufactured in China. And no one really knows how many there actually are, but estimates put the global number at somewhere between 20 and 30 million. It's a lot of containers. They're mainly 20 foot or 40 foot long by about 8 foot wide by 8 foot 6 inches high. The 40 foot ones are huge, by the way. They're like looking into endless caves. But when they're empty, they just look massive. There are lots of other sizes too, though, including 10 foot ones, 45 foot, and even 60 foot long. Some are slightly higher at 9 foot 6 instead of 8 foot 6. These are called high cube. And for an idea of size, a 20 foot container would take the contents of about probably a 2 or 3 bedroom house, and a 40 foot would suit a 4 or 5 bedroom house. And here's an interesting fact. They're actually made, or most of them are made from Corten steel, which is a steel compound with additives that help the surface oxidise quickly to prevent them rusting further. Because you can imagine these things are going transatlantic or across the Pacific or around the world on boats exposed to salty water. So they have to last. And we have some containers, I don't know how old they are, but they're probably a few decades. They will last well outside, as long as they're looked after when they need it. Our first commercial property this year was a slightly more complicated deal for us. We actually carried out two transactions simultaneously, namely the purchase of a good single let, a passive investment really, which it does have a plan B should the tenant decide to move out or move on at some point. But it's on a full lease, full insure and repair and lease. But the real value add to our business was through the second part of that transaction, which was of a container storage facility, which was on an adjacent piece of ground to that property. And this site is not far from one of our other investments, which meant we could immediately add value to our current offering by having more scale. In addition, the signage and the existing goodwill helped with the rest of our storage business because the location of this new site for us is really good, great for signage. So we have just under 100 containers in use right now, which leaves at least 19,999,900 containers left out in the world that are not being used by us. So it's a small part of the business, but nevertheless, it's good for us. And interestingly, today all of our containers, and in fact our storage units, are 100% let, which is a sign of things right now. It's interesting that element of the market is holding up very well. The average price we let the 20-foot containers for is around about £90 per month, excluding VAT, which means that around about 100k income a year, so it's not a huge part of our business, but get it right, and the ROI on these things can be really amazing, especially when I tell you how much they cost to buy. But just before I move on to that, just to give you a little bit more context, our competition around locally is between, so the lower end, £70, some of them are even less, up to just under £200 a month. But it does depend on your overall offer, who the company is that's providing it, what the location's like, and what things are including. But it gives you a ballpark of where pricing is. So the second thing I wanted to cover was how much do they cost and where do you get them from? And you can buy new or second-hand containers fairly easily. It's actually very rare, though, to be able to buy completely new. It's actually really expensive to do so, because if you think about it, if they're made in China, it wouldn't really make any sense to buy one and then ship an empty container, basically full of air, all the way back from China. You'd be charged a lot for the shipping. In fact, probably more than the container itself. So most new containers are actually called one-trip containers. They're used to ship goods for a company, say Walmart or Asda or something like that, and then the container's sold on rather than sent back empty, because as we all know, China is a net producer of goods. So there would be a lot of empty containers going back. And the price for these one-trip containers does depend on how many China's producing and how many are in circulation and where the economy's at and all that sort of stuff. But at the moment, they're around about £2,000 from the quayside. Depending on which country you're in, it'll vary, but I can't imagine it'd be too much different because they're such a global commodity. That's for the 20-foot container, by the way, not the 40. The 40-foot container generally is about twice that. They're quite a lot of money. At least for me, I think they're quite a lot of money. It's £4,000. I think we bought one for £3,800. There's a small reduction. But a proper second-hand 20-foot container will be anything from £1,200 up to £2,000, depending on where you're buying it, what condition the box is in. Remember, they're all, as I say, made from cotton steel, which lasts. So that second-hand product is quite, should be a good consideration for you. The challenge I will put down, though, is that making sure that the colour is all the same can be quite difficult, particularly if you're looking at a sensitive site where planning is important. Really, one of those things is to try and tick the box and make them all the same colour rather than a patchwork quilt. The bit I haven't mentioned, though, is these prices are ex works or on the dock. In other words, the price does not include transport to you. And you'll need to get the container to wherever you're setting up shop, and that isn't cheap. Buying two 20-foot containers at the same time will help share. Let me take a moment to thank Office R&D for supporting the podcast. It's really important to us that we only work with sponsors that we've used ourselves. It's all about being authentic, right? Office R&D is the best flexible workspace platform we've come across, and believe me, we've tried a few systems over the last 20 years. Office R&D helps us manage our invoicing, customer community, reporting, building access, and many more aspects of our day-to-day operations. Why not book yourself a free demo to see how they can help you free up more time to grow your business? Follow the partner link in the show notes.
The cost, because they can both fit on the back of the same transporter, and we pay, really depends on where they're coming from, but we can pay £300 to £400 per shipment, depending on where they are. Again, depending on which country you're in, if you're in the US or perhaps down in Australia, you know, shipping these things from the coast will cost a lot. And there may be other alternative routes, of course. There'll be inland places you can pick them up. There are a number of companies who specialise in selling the one-trip and second-hand containers. You just get online and look for them. Get on their mailing list. They'll start dropping you mailings of when things are coming up. But I just want to give you a few basics to know before committing to this sort of thing. So as I say, this podcast is a bit of an introduction. It's a couple of lists here, things for you to think about. And this is one of the important ones. If you decide to start buying things, buying containers that is, then there's a few questions you need to ask. The first one obviously is, you know, if you're buying it online, where is it? Where is it actually situated right now? And how much is it going to cost to actually get it to you on transport? So that's the second thing. Does the price actually include the shipping and transport? And if not, how much is that going to be? And then the third thing is just to check, is it a one-trip container or is it a second-hand container? Which leads on to the next one. Is there any damage? If it's a second-hand container, then there can be damage. Sometimes there's holes. Sometimes something's drilled something in the side of it and then there's just a hole left there. Sometimes the floor can shift a little bit if a moisture gets in there. And then you need to confirm the size of the container. Is it a normal height or a high cube, the one I mentioned earlier on? Is it a 40-foot container that you're ordering, or actually they're going to send you a 45? We had a high one delivered once, and it was a 40-footer, and they don't look great against all the other containers that are a different size. And we didn't check, and whether they told us it was a high cube or not, I can't remember, but it was a lesson. You need to make sure it's not a high cube, unless that's the type of container you want to stock, of course. Then you need to confirm the colour to make sure it's specifically the one that you want. Sometimes the price will be based on a certain colour, green for instance, but you might want blue, and it turns out that one's an extra £100 or dollars or whatever to get that particular finish. So you need to check what colour you're paying for. And here's an important one. Does it have provision for a secure padlock under a padlock cover. Most shipping containers, if they've just been shipped for consignment use, then they might not have a padlock cover. And this is effectively an additional welded piece that sits over where the padlock goes, and it makes it much more difficult to basically to break into the container or cut the padlock, because all the padlock's covered except for where the key goes in. So that's quite important that that's on there, because if it's not and you want to get that put on, it's going to cost you quite a bit of extra money. And bear in mind, there'll almost always be VAT on these figures. Almost always. So you need to factor that into your business plan. Let me introduce you to a key partner for our storage container business. Wheelbox has over 20 locations throughout the UK and their own transport, which is just one of the reasons we choose to use Wheelbox for our container requirements. All of their products are available for hire, lease purchase or outright purchase, so you can create a balance between capital expenditure up front and cash flow over the longer term. They also have their own in-house fabrication and conversion facilities, which allows them to create bespoke container or modular designs just for you. And as part of the service, the team provide a fully comprehensive self-storage consultancy package to anyone looking to expand their current sites or breaking into this fast-growing industry. Now, I'm really excited to tell you Wheelbox are currently offering a free aerial site survey for you, our listeners. Just quote CPI Network when you get in touch, and they'll create a site drawing showing your optimal container layout. Now that's really useful. Perfect for you to maximise your drive-up storage ideas. So, check out the show notes or simply type Wheelbox into your browser and reach out to their amazing team to discuss how Wheelbox can be a key partner to you unlocking your self-storage goals. So the third thing is, who are the customers? Who actually uses these things? Well, it's about three or four different groups, I guess. The first one is residential. People just store stuff, don't they? Sometimes it's because they're doing something. They might be moving home, so they need to shift everything out. They've maybe missed the move out and the move in date is staggered, so they need to store some stuff. But other people will just take on a container and keep it for long term, because they've just got general stuff they put in there. They're not necessarily moving, as I say, but it's a lifestyle choice. They realise they need a container for some of their stuff. Either they like hoarding or they just like a clearer home. And they might put their toys or lifestyle things in a container that they bring out at different times of the year. As I say, in Florida, I remember a lot of people stored cars and boats in their storage spaces over there. The next group, though, is business customers. And this is the one that I have to say we prefer, the one that we aim for more. And they might be storing samples, stock, prototypes, archiving. I mean, the list is pretty long. The great thing about these types of facilities on mixed-use sites, containers that is, on mixed-use sites, that is that often the customers that you already have for different types of space will actually be interested in taking a container too. It's cheaper than an office or a bigger office or workspace, but it's still on site and easy to get to. So think about it. A new business, often when they're moving out a house or they're just setting up and think, right, I need space here, often they think they need an industrial unit. And this moves over to the tradespeople as well. They often think, right, I need somewhere where I can set up an internet connection, get a desk and do some paperwork, but I also need to keep all my stuff. So they think they need an industrial unit, maybe as little as 1,000 square feet, maybe even less. But that's not always the case, because actually, if you could offer them a two-person or a three-person office to cover the admin section and a container or two for storage, then it allows them to do both at a much less price commitment. Because an industrial unit generally means a longer lease, and it certainly means you're covering all the expenses yourself as the customer. But if you're taking on a space on a serviced offering, then you may be only having to pay two bills there, one for the container or two containers and one for the office. So it can actually work out quite a bit cheaper. It's quite a good offer. So then the last group of customers I was going to talk about, but I know they're quite prevalent in the cities, is students. Seasonal, of course, and often at the end of term, so it saves them taking everything home. But it is a sector that some of the larger self-storage companies go for, but obviously the space they need is a lot less. So 20-foot container is probably a little bit too big. It's really you're looking at internal storage where you've got small units or even crates. So why would you actually consider doing container storage? So before we go too much further, I need to ask that usual question. Why? Why do you want to do this? And this business can be really good, but you need to test the opportunity against your long-term goals, because it can sound attractive, but is it actually a distraction or a detour that will take up time and resource? And does it really fit your model well? There's no doubt it is a business and is not anything like renting out an industrial unit to some kind of large corporate or something for 15 years and just waiting for the rent check to come in every 3 months. This is a bit more complicated, dynamic, I guess, and time-consuming. Plus, the returns per customer are way smaller. But, of course, if one customer leaves, you've still got 40 or 50 other ones, depending on the size of your site. Some of the reasons I really like it, though, are the high level of ROI. The return on investment is really high. If you're spending $2,000 on a container, okay, there's a bit of storage and stuff, and you're renting out for $1,000 a year, you do the numbers. The thing is, you're going to need a site, and we'll come into that later. So cash flow is great. And the ability of adding another income stream through containers is really good. You can bolt it onto existing trade, which can be no additional overhead if you do it right. There's less restrictions and compliance compared to housing stock. I think we'd all agree on that. Taxation is as a commercial trading business, not as a residential investor. And then, of course, there's the obvious stuff like, well, the boiler doesn't break because it doesn't have one. The smoke alarms aren't a problem. The carpets don't need replacing every time a tenant leaves. And the government doesn't tax us before interest. Oh, and the toilets don't get blocked because there aren't any. Storage containers are really simple. However, one of the most important factors is right in that list. If you want to run a site on its own, container storage on its own, then you will need some scale. All of our container storage is either on a manned site that we already have with other product effectively, or very close to a manned site. So we don't need to factor in any more overhead to manage it. And to give you an idea, on average, about one customer changes every month for, say, 40 to 50 containers. So for every 40 to 50 containers, you might need to change a customer each month. And other sites will have a higher frequency. It depends on your price point, where you are, what type of customers you're aiming for. So you'll need to make contact with new customers. You'll need to go through a sales process. You'll need to onboard those new customers each time somebody moves out. And that's difficult to do if you have a goal of living on a boat in the Mediterranean. So you need to think about, is this going to sit with what you want to do long term? If it does sit with it and you want to live on a boat in the Med, then scale is going to be your only answer. So you can afford to pay someone to look after it for you. Now, if you have a team that's already doing serviced accommodation or serviced offices or other types of property-related business, and this can sit alongside it, then great. That's great. But if it's just you, then you're going to have to do it yourself until you can get enough scale to pay somebody to do it. But I guess it all depends on where you are in the cycle, right? What I don't want, though, is for you to dive headlong into this without first evaluating if it suits those long-term goals. And that's my point, really. It's getting back to your unique search criteria. I'll go into more about site size and location and that sort of thing in the next episode, or at least in the next episode of this series. But the last item I want to cover just now is what kind of site do you actually need for containers? So there are lots of factors that will affect whether a site or a location is suitable for container storage. But even if it's just half a dozen containers, by the way, which is exactly how we started off, these factors will affect any size, really. So ideally, the ground you're going to use is going to be, I would say ideally, is a brownfield site. It's already got a hard standing. And what I mean by that is it's maybe got an old concrete slab there, tarmac, or some very hard standing there that's been used for storage for other things, because it's great for laying containers down on and for driving around on. And it needs to drain well. If not, then you'll need to lay the containers on sound supports. You might have to do that to level them anyway. And you need to make sure you're thinking about drainage and that people aren't going to be pulling up in a puddle to jump out of their, into their container. And you'll still need suitable access to get the containers in. So your transportation choice should include for a Hiab. I'm sure most of you know, but basically that's just a lorry with a small crane on the back of it. So the transporter can offload the container for you into the right position. But if it can't reach it, then you need to organise for a crane. And these are usually hired by the day at a minimum. They don't really hire them by the hour. They're quite expensive to get. So you really want to be doing more than one container at a time with that. Planning is something I'll go into a bit later, but it's no good trying to load containers onto a conservation area. Just make sure the site's going to be suitable and acceptable. It's also a very good idea to make sure that once the containers are in, your customers can access the site with vehicles and drive up close to their container. The ones they can't get good access to are the ones that you end up letting last. We've got one or two that are just tucked away a little bit, and they always end up being the last ones that re-let. So the more that you can give them access, the better. So although we have developed an offering now that's more than just containers, so we have like internal units and archive storage and things, as mentioning earlier on, container storage is still my favourite thing. It's a brilliant way of improving cash flow from an existing site. And next time I'm going to go into funding options, location, competition, hidden costs, security, planning, various other components. In fact, a few people have put some messages in the Facebook group today of things they'd like me to chat about. So I'm going to put those into future episodes about storage. But hopefully this has served to whet your appetite for just now. So just to summarise, what are they? Well, they're 20 foot or 40 foot steel containers. They can be different sizes. There's a lot of them. But they are waterproof boxes that can sit outside for, well, we've had some of ours are 20 years old, maybe older, after they've done their service life, where they were bought secondhand. They can last a long time. And how much do they cost? Well, anything from £1,200 up to £2,000, maybe a bit more, depending if they're secondhand or they've been used once. We've sourced them from various companies, but there's a good company now that we deal with in Scotland most of the time, but they're dotted around. You have to think about it. In the UK, there's Grangemouth, Liverpool, Southampton, Portsmouth, the different places where containers come into, and a lot of the time that's where they get sold on, is right there. And you'll find within reasonable distance from these places is where actually you can pick them up. It'll be the same for people in other countries too. You just got to think about where the ports are. So who are the customers? Well, domestic and business. They're the two main ones. Students are also there, but not necessarily for storage containers. But I found business customers are the ones that are likely to stay longer with you and likely to take more than one container and likely to recommend you to other places. Plus, if you're having to put VAT on this, which I would strongly advise, then there are customers that are going to be able to claim that back as well. The fourth one that we went through was just why. You need to think about whether this is actually going to sit alongside what you're doing and fit in well, or whether actually it's just going to be a distraction. Because although it can make some really good returns, it may be a distraction. And then the fifth thing is, what kind of site do you need? Well, hard-standing brownfield site, ideally it's because it's next to a building you're already interested in or you've already bought. That really is the golden nugget. If you can get those two together, and then you can add containers in, sell the container space to your existing client base, and add on as a new income stream. So if you have any questions on this topic, then get on the website or the Facebook group at the usual facebook.com/commercialpropertyinvestor. There's a thread on there where you can pop in any questions you'd like me to cover on future podcasts about storage. Before you go, if you like this episode and want to make sure you don't miss the next one on container storage, then get subscribed to the podcast on your favourite platform right now, so it drops straight onto your listening device as soon as the latest episode is released. It means you won't miss the next one. I'm really grateful to everyone that has kindly let me know that the podcast is helping them. It's been great to hear stories of people that have taken a podcast to heart and are listening to them and using them to help advance their commercial journey. And if it has helped you, please take a minute just to leave a review. It'll really help us reach more people, which in turn will help us make the podcast better and better. So that's it for this week. I hope you have a great week in commercial, and we'll speak to you next time.